Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Thank you. Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry, because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer at the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, no, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by, because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. but I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there and looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track, you see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands. I was just thinking the other day, because I mentioned this on one of the programs maybe about 6 months ago, and just briefly. I was talking about the housing situation, briefly. Black people are in a housing crisis. I remember going back 40 years ago, I mean, when the sun went down, most black people had somewhere to go. I call it the shack by the track with the room in the back, because there were a lot of them in those days. Those shacks disappeared years ago. It used to be a lot of little shacks down by the railroad tracks, with some places where white people didn't even want to be bothered with on account of just that. Trains go up and down tracks, and trains make a lot of noise. Well, black people, back in the old days, they got used to the noise. In fact, they depended on it. They liked that clickety-clack that went by. In fact, looking at the trains go by in the evening was one way that they entertained themselves. They didn't have television or radio, so they'd sit on the porch and watch that 5 o'clock train go by. It's just a few a dozen yards away. You know, there goes the old Atchison and Topeka, or whatever it is, or the MKT, Missouri, Kansas, Texas. I mean, just watch it go by, you know, with all cars on it. I used to do it. And now those little shacks served a purpose. It meant that if a girl left, you know, the shack by the track with the room in the back and went way up to the big city up north somewhere, and she got pregnant maybe by some fella that made a lot of promises that he couldn't keep, which is the usual thing. And so what she would do, I mean, she got a little job there, I mean, you know, but it's not enough to sustain her and whatnot, not her and a child, period. So she would take that child back to Grandma, Aunt Hattie, I mean, who was right down there on that little railroad track. You come on down, honey. I mean, bring the child. I heard you got one. And just bring it down here and leave it, you know, and I'll have it run around here helping me out in the garden and all like that. And you just go on back to your job. Now, that was a salvation.
Yes, sir.
But now you don't have that anymore. All those shacks by the track would, you know, are gone. So I say that to compensate for that, everybody, if they can, should have a little place in the basement or someplace, you know, in the big cities now, where if you happen to have it, now most people don't have it, you don't have that room, but try to make some room for one extra person who might be falling on hard times that you can get along with. Usually it's going to be some bickering and whatnot, but somebody in the extended family and whatnot who's having a hard time just having a roof over his or her head, have that place set aside in the basement or that little extra room back there, I mean, with the bed made up and the blanket on it, I mean, you know, and say, well, you can stay here, say, for, you know, for as long as it takes for you to try to get through and get a job. And so I call it that shack by the track with, you know,
with
the room
in
the back. Right.
Okay. Welcome to Camp Huguet.
This 11-year-old spent her summer turning the inside of this camper from this to this.
I was looking through an American Girl magazine, and I saw a camper for $650 for an American Girl, and it was a very nice camper. My dad said that was really expensive for us, so he said that we could get a real camper for that amount of money. So then I went out and I started looking for one. We saw down the road a house had a camper for sale that I had been looking at for a while. So I really wanted to get it, and the guy said it was for $500. And then I told him $400 because that was what I had, and he said sold.
And the total cost of renovations thus far? $400.
We had looked on Pinterest and saw a lot of cool camper ideas, and I liked this beachy boho style with lots of plants and different colors and sea glass and driftwood, that style. So I liked that, and we decided to paint the camper walls white and then our kitchen cabinets turquoise. So this is my dining area. I got this from our potting shed that had dust and dead flies all over it, so we cleaned it up and that's what we got. We planted some plants from Dollar General in there. We have all of this on the backside came from our house except for that one picture back there from Dollar General. And a fun fact about these, this table and these cabinets, they flip down into a bed, and so does this. And then over here we have the kitchen where we can't quite cook stuff yet, but it's very decorative. And this is our refrigerator. To fit inside of it. And then if we walk a little further down, we have right here, these are very nice decals that we got for a dollar at the Dollar Tree. And then if we walk a little bit farther in here, we have a mirror that we painted the edges that came with the camper originally. And we have a closet over here, and it's the Lawrence little camper. I got this side from my neighbor who made it for me. And then we keep walking, and now we're in the bedroom. So we have four beds in here, and we got these really cute mattresses off of Etsy.
She painted most of it herself. She had her grandma come over the one day and help with the cupboards, but I would be gone for the day, and I'd come home, and she'd say, like, you could tell, and I'd say, how long were you in here? And she's like, oh, I painted about 4 hours straight.
Well, I'm very creative and artistic, so I love to paint and draw and stuff like that, so it kind of came to me naturally.
With this COVID thing, it's kind of interrupting her fun that she wants to have in it, but she's making the best of it.
Lauren hopes to be able to have friends over soon, but a chance to get away from home works for now.
I hope you enjoyed my camper tour. Thanks for stopping by.
This is Inside Edition Digital.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home.
And she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account, and he said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just like hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Hygge. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
So now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has three envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the tiny home nation.
She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same.
Which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing.
If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how...
Okay, before I play that audio, which I played a gazillion times, today's podcast is titled Sunday School. It was inspired... Well, I got to give credit to Beasley on this one. Because I played that Neely Fuller piece before, but taking a page out of Pianki's book, we're not waiting on the government. This is something that we're doing ourselves. So we got, and I've got another, I got a prime piece of property we're sticking into this. I don't want to announce that yet. I'll just say it's the origins of It's My House. But in any event, we're going to be having, as I was on the phone yesterday afternoon, throughout the night, and early this morning, we're going to market, and one of the reasons why I've been playing the Laura, what do you call it, Laura Nelson audio, she's the 11-year-old out of Attica, New York, that for $800, she's got her own little tiny house. We want to set up, and we're going to be marketing, and I'm just, because this is still a work in progress, under Sunday schools, Saturday schools, weekend schools, Sabbath schools, not so much religious, okay, but the idea of what Neely Fuller communicated, the core idea was people getting together. Okay, you can leave the religion out of it. People getting together and building sustainable and affordable structures. That's the core of Sunday school. The reason why I'm using Sunday school or weekend school, because it'll be marketed different way under different names in different places, but the action of it offline is, I mean, people have heard of Sunday school. People have heard of Saturday school. People have heard of, you know, weekend schools or Sabbath school. They've heard all those things, so that's the marketing of it. But when they ask about more details, this is what we'll be doing using social capital. So it says something struck me when Beasley mentioned something yesterday, and then when Pianki chimed in. Like you said, we're not waiting on the government or unions or anybody else. This is something I've got the resources now to do it. However, I can only do so much. So that's why I've been on the phone yesterday afternoon throughout the night, and I'm even doing some chats right now on my phone, because now we had to get out into the community and then organize this stuff to put it together. So on that note, I'm about to play a couple of videos. This next one is, I used to call it 9 friends. I've extended it to 12.
Say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass, high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." the fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family gonna live in there? Is they gonna, I'm gonna get to know the motherfuckers. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with, usually, if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions. And that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills. And then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat, takes a lot less money to cool, it's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on. With no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
Hey, good morning. Hey, good afternoon. You're now listening to your Captain Quick Draw. Station KDJ 3799. We're broadcasting to you from the command module. Commodore Steamship, a Commodore Country. We just done geek. Hey, I'm about the first mama up there around that Watergate City. Hey, around that Watergate City, up around the big house. Hey, the big white house up on the hill. Hey, we just some kids, hey, sitting by waiting for your return. Hey, get out of that cotton pickle. Hey, cotton pickle, get off my ass. You do help me breaking for that first. Hey, mama. Hey, you talk, hey, when your name is called, not before. Hey, we gonna take a stood by, hey, and listen all over again. Appreciate the comeback. Hey, good rest of the life. Hey, cause we didn't know whether we were making a trip, hey, up to Yorktown City. Hey, but since we are, hey, we do want to pass the number to you. All the 73-88-44. Hey, and good gracious the life above all. Hey, a good day today. A better day tomorrow. And a most prosperous and productive year to come. We just some keys. Hey, I bought a shaggy dog. Hey, I bought that shaggy dog one time. Hey, we breaking, standing by.
Hey, here, oh, a mercy, stand by, quick draw. Some cop figure keying up.
Hey, all we wanted to do, hey, was just find out how you feeling, hey, this fine afternoon. And wanted to know also, hey, had you seen that kind of thing you feel the dollar? Hey, good gracious alive, hey, Mr. Adam. Hey, good gracious, hey, the strong man, hey, of Atlanta. This guy's big and red baron cut my coax. Hey, come on, red baron.
Because I used to observe that a lot of little shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be, super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you're right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions. Took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that, So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I, coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Okay, well, we're tweaking what Neely Fuller just put out there. We're not expecting the government. We're not expecting any, you know, no blame, no victimhood or nothing like that. We're simply setting up these Sunday schools or weekend schools. What are we? Like I said, we're starting off with the name Sunday school for marketing purposes, because people know what Sunday school is. And we're basically taking the basic, simple principle of people getting together to build, I wouldn't call them a shack, but nice-looking, aesthetically functional houses we might not even call them houses. Well, let's use the term tiny houses. So, there's nothing new under the sun, and we've got the resources offline, which we're going to combine with online, and I've even, just within the last 24 hours, matter of fact, because I've been on my phone, you know, texting back and then actually Facebook. And you got some interest in somebody out of Atlanta, but I'm still going back and forth with that. So we'll be back to open up the phone lines here. Like I said, we're fielding some of this stuff. So I know the energy was right, and so when Beasley mentioned something, I jumped on that, and then Pianchi mentioned teach them yourself. So this is something that we can do now, and we can do it in multiple places. So we already got a few places, so we want to start with what we already have and get that going. So we'll be back in a few minutes.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Boy, I'm scrambling around here. In any event, Sunday school. So this is simple as that. Sunday school. I got a conference call with some on the ground people that I've known for a number of years in one city. We'll leak a little bit more information as we progress on this on a daily basis. But what we want to do is essentially get some, social proof. So you can see some video or somebody that you might know in the local cities that we already have what I would call assets. And because once you have social proof, you know. But in any event, more information to come on Sunday school. But like I said, we got the basics, tangible basics, offline already. Now we're going into motion during the holidays, because it is November the 17th. And Thanksgiving is in a matter of days. Okay. 314, your mic is open.
Hello, you get that email I sent you?
Man, I haven't checked no emails in a day.
Oh, man.
I got to go. You know what? That's
LA.
On the phone. Huh?
That is some good information.
I'm sure it is. I just haven't. You know what? Wait a minute. Hold on. I'm not going away. I am going. I got to go to the. Where's that phone at? Hold on.
The end.
That phone, oh, man, what did I do with that phone? Because I got two smartphones. I'm on a landline right now. And I put that phone on charge, but I don't. Where did, all right, wait a minute. So it won't be dead air. Hold on a second.
Okay.
How's the weather wherever you are? Hold, you know, wait a minute. All right, people, I'll be back like in a minute. This is a play.
Brooklyn Independent Television.
It's been nearly 2 months since the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission greenlit the Group Vehicle Ride Pilot Program. The program was designed to help commuters along corridors where bus routes had been eliminated. The B71 is the latest route to join the program, and Sherry Carabin jumped aboard the dollar van to find out if it's smooth sailing.
Our starting point is at Franklin. That's the starting point, and Eastern Parkway.
The B71 service area is among a handful that are part of the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission's Group Ride Vehicle Pilot Project. The vans cost $2 a ride and are designed to assist those living in areas where the MTA has discontinued bus routes. The first group ride vehicles hit the streets around mid-September in Queens. Brooklyn's B23 and B39 routes are also part of the pilot. The B71 route starts in Crown Heights and ends in Red Hook, with Brooklyn Van Lines providing the service.
Traditionally, van companies would operate in Caribbean American neighborhoods, Central Brooklyn, and in Queens. But this new agreement with the city expanded our range in going to into areas that we would normally would not go. So that is a given. That is a good thing. I think it's a good thing for the van industry.
Right now, Brooklyn Van Lines has about a half dozen drivers, manning the van 7 days a week from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. On this Sunday, I decided to get on board and take a tour of the route myself. It's the latest area of the borough to be serviced by group ride vehicles, but those who operate the former B-71 bus route are having a hard time getting commuters to hop on board.
The numbers are in 15 to 20 range for the day, which
15 to 20 passengers for the entire day?
Right. So,
with numbers like those, it's hard to make ends meet.
For insurance costs. Almost $10,000 per year. You gotta do DOT inspection 2 times per year. There's a diamond there, you gotta pay a TLC diamond. It's $550 for 2 years. Registration fee also went up.
3 months ago, the MTA cut that route, and it took really too long. This should have been done the following day after the last bus left that route. But it took so long before the city could make this agreement and make this arrangement with the van companies that all of the riders pretty much went back to, you know, taking their own transportation or finding some other form of transporting themselves to their work and their shopping areas.
TLC Commissioner David Yaski admits there are growing pains, saying, quote, "The challenge is to make sure that as many people as possible are aware of the service. And to that end, we've been assisting to the extent that we can by devoting space on our website to the services, printing and distributing thousands of flyers and palm cards, making presentations at community forums, and enlisting the media to help spread the word. But we do hope to see the operators become far more aggressive in their marketing and outreach efforts," end quote. Certainly, some of the residents Brooklyn Review spoke to seem to be unaware of the service, but not unwilling to consider using it.
So would you be likely to use them now that you know about them?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? I would give it a shot.
I really don't know much about it, but if it can get me where I need to go, yeah, I would take it.
This Community Board 6 member has a different take on the issue.
Ideally, I'd like to see the bus service return. Failing that, it would be nice if the vans were on some kind of predictable schedule.
Setting a schedule is one of the things those at Brooklyn Van Lines are looking at, but it's not their only focus.
Some of the things we're considering includes, you know, $1 fare during off-peak and weekend times, or some sort of all-you-can-ride for a period of time. Fares, you know, maybe $3, you can ride for 3 hours. Something to get people to try the service for some of their daily needs.
In the coming weeks, those who run Brooklyn Van Lines say they'll be hitting the streets and distributing flyers to residents and local businesses, letting everyone know these group ride vehicles are here to stay. For Brooklyn Review, I'm Sherry Carabin.
Download this program's podcast on iTunes. Keywords, Brooklyn Independent Television.
Okay, I found my phone. You know, this is crazy. I was sitting on. Okay. Oh, I'm glad I didn't. I wasn't sitting fully on it, but thank God I had pillows and everything. I don't want to. Yeah, this is smooth. All right, Pianca, you're talking about the email with the photos and videos of the dome places.
Yeah, you see those photos?
Yep, I'm looking at them right now.
Those are 20-foot structures. And
everything's landscaped.
Well, yeah. And I think you can put 4 on an acre. 10,000 square feet apiece. Yeah, so you can put 4 on an acre. And you got how many acres in Texas?
10.
Oh, heck, you 10. You'd be able to put 40 of them bad boys in there, at least 35.
Only thing is, and I have to check on this, is, you know, when you get to a certain level, they consider the subdivision, and then when that happens, you impact studies and all this other stuff.
Well, you're going to have, you don't have sewer there, so you're going to have septic.
Yep.
You got electric.
Yep.
I'm sure you got water.
Yep.
And, of course, you can, I guess you have gas. I don't know if you got natural pipe gas from a utility or
no,
whatever.
No, I try to stay away from utilities.
All right, well, you're going to have electric. You can have electric heat.
Or propane.
Well, yeah, you can have propane. Then you get into a whole nother. You might have to check and see if you're into another hazardous category.
Yeah, that's true, yeah, because every place is different. Because, like, for instance, like in D.C., you're not allowed to have anything propane within the house.
No, I wouldn't
either. You know, unless it's a barbecue. But if you just step across the line in D.C. into the suburbs, you can have a propane stove. So I just figured my read from that is Pepco and Washington Gas. Pepco is the electric company in D.C., which is a monopoly, and Washington Gas is a private, and they're both private companies. They basically, well, a la Claude Anderson, they got the legislation in place where, you know, you can't bring in, you can't have a propane stove in D.C. You can do a cookout, but not inside the house. Whereas you just go across the line to Maryland, Norfolk. Well, definitely Maryland. You can have
propane is no different than natural gas stove. The tank's outside, right?
The
tank's outside.
Yeah, it's natural gas, but you step across that line in Maryland. Because I know in Barbados when I was down there. They have a propane stove.
Yeah. A propane stove, propane gas, as long as it's stored outside, the valve is on the outside, the exhaust valve, that is, if something happened.
Right.
The same way it is with natural gas. It's in your house. So that shouldn't be no problem. This is what somebody wants to use. You have to have a water heater. Water heater can either be electric. Electric works pretty good for a small installation like that. You're only talking about one bedroom.
What do you think about the, what do you call those things, the on-demand hot water heaters?
Well, they have their benefits and their disadvantages. But if they run by gas, that's a whole different thing. You have to have stainless steel flues with them. But those little styles, they're pretty nice. If somebody has some money that they wanted to invest in, they used to deliver those pre-made, but the cost of shipping is outlandish. So now they have to come out and make them in place.
Right.
But that information that's there, you do the math on what space you have available and what you could build.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a nice little retirement income.
Yeah, I need that. I'm reading another article that you sent. After Biden win, black activists demand reparations for slavery and police reform.
Yeah, and that should be a discussion on what they asking for and is it possible. And you know you should have a show. I tell some other people, I say, you know, you guys, I say, you have these shows on what hip-hop has done to the community and all that stuff. And then you dilly into a little politics. But you have shows, ask people, what is it that they are expecting from who they went out and voted for? Ask them what caused them to develop that attitude. And then let's see if the people you went out and voted for, if they can legally deliver what you expect for them, therefore leaving you being bamboozled.
Well, what's today?
Now on
Tuesday?
On those units there, there's that company. Of course, you're in Texas. You right there by them because they in Ithaca, the manufacturer. And I don't know how far you are from Ithaca, Texas. But
no,
well,
I'm in Florida physically. I have 10 acres in Texas.
Well, that's where
you
would build
Ithaca,
if you would build. Yeah, if you were to build, you'd build in Texas.
Because that 10 acres is in Mapper, Texas, which is about 45 minutes away from the Mexico border.
Well, you could build. They could come out and build, or you could form your own company, your construction company, erecting the structure, then coming in, doing the finish work, which is much, which would basically be trim doors and windows, trim for windows, and also installing your utilities, not your utilities, but your appliances.
Mm-hmm.
It was toilet, bathroom appliances and fixtures, the kitchen appliances and fixtures, the lights, stringing, the wires would be ran before you start doing the spraying. So you have a crew doing one, you form two crews, and the crews will go from one place to the next. When the rough end crew does what they do, the finished crew come in and do what they do, and the rough crew will move on to the next. So they just follow themselves right on down the line.
Okay.
And you figure how many they can do in a day.
I found Ithaca, Texas, and my place is in Marfa, Texas. One way is 7 hours and 54 minutes. It's 493 miles away.
Yeah, they'd have to move in on site. Or you can have
big,
your own
Texas
construction
big state. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have your own construction crew, should I say.
Yeah, they're not too far from Dallas, Texas. I'm near the close thing to me is the Mexico border, and then like even El Paso is 2 or 3 hours away.
Yeah. So those units, according to the description that article is based on, them people got a waiting list of folks wanted to get in those places, and if you had two bedrooms, it would be ideal for the demographics that they have out there today, that is being a single white woman with one or two kids.
Yeah, they
put a nursery.
You know,
put a nursery on site to address the needs of those demographics. Put a store someplace near to address the needs for what people want to eat.
Eat and conveniences and stuff of that nature.
You could have a small washer and dryer, or you could have a laundromat in each unit. And then you figure on what you're going to charge people. Make sure you have the right type of contracts for them to engage in. You don't want it to be one category when it should be another category. I think that's well described in that article on how that outfit chose which way to go. Because you know it's a difference between extended stay and rent.
Yeah, I've had friends that stayed in extended stays. I didn't ever ask what they were paying, but
I don't know what they're paying. I guess it's different. It depends on where you are.
Yeah, where you are. Well, one was she lives outside the country, and she used an extended stay. Well, I imagine she had everything she needed, and it was, I guess, more cost effective than staying at a hotel.
Now and then you could have, if you're going to stay in Florida, you could have your management and give your management one of the places for them to stay. Right.
Because you're going to need that. You're right.
And that could go toward their pay. That's the way the Indians do it in these places that they own.
Their resorts and their resorts and casinos.
Well, no, hotels.
The
hotel days in and Holiday Inn, they own them, and they have a family that stays there, and they maintain the place, do everything that's needed. And they also have a conglomerate of those that they own several of them, and they work it like that.
Well, the Patels must operate the same way, sounds like.
Yeah, the L.A.
Motel.
Davis is good, too.
Yeah.
You build one, then you could build another 30-unit complex. Buy some more land. Then build, have about four or five of them. Have 160 units.
Well, that sounds great for cash.
One collateralized the other. And get some long stays in there. Sooner or later, you have all this stuff paid. Your initial investment be paid off. I would say that those 40 probably bring in, I don't know, you'd have to do the math. The people put there some pertinent numbers in that article. I think she's got 48.
Okay.
Is that what they say?
Wait a minute. I was loading up because I wanted to share that.
She bring in about $345,600 a year.
Hmm. That's nice.
Mm-hmm. If she got a backup, a waiting list, so she's going to rent them all. That's on the low side.
Let me see, construction. What? These computers. Just as a side, what do you know about 5G? I'm asking that because it's something.
Well, it's a good thing to do. I put it underground, though. Matter of fact, you want your utilities underground, too. And, city areas, you put it underground. You know, we was doing, looking at putting 5G in a city in Nigeria. But in a city area, you put it underground.
Okay.
And have trunks running lateral with your street, and businesses come out and tie into the trunks. But, you know, spreading out over the countryside, you need towers.
Hmm.
I mean, that's going to be the way to go. People worry about radiation.
I mean, I think a lot of these new subdivisions, they've been doing underground utilities for a while, haven't they?
Yeah, generally, yes, they do.
Mm.
It's a way to go. There's less
from falling down on you.
Less exposure. Yeah, less exposure to storms and so forth.
That's true. Well, look, let me do this dome audio because I think, it, matter of fact, it's part of what you sent me. I want to share with people.
Hey, guys, so we are at the little monolithic dome village here in Italy, Texas, and we've been through all the buildings they could show us that don't have people in them. One of the things that I think is the most exciting is that they rent out little mini domes. I think they're 314 square feet. They rent for $140 a week and includes everything. It includes power.
The car going by.
It includes electricity. It includes sewer. It includes garbage pickup and lawn mowing and that kind of thing. And so you can get into a really super insulated, cute little house as a rental. And we're going to go in and see what one of them looks like. This is their visitor center, so you can see it, because all of their rental units are occupied, and there's a two-month waiting list. So these domes are sprayed on an air form. So they do an air form, like a big bubble, and then they spray foam on top of that. And then they take and they spray concrete on the outside of that, and they take the form, and when they go inside, they then spray concrete on the inside as well, so that it is super insulated, tornado-proof, earthquake-proof, and probably child-proof even. So we're going to go inside and see what it looks like. Go ahead and follow me in. Okay, so it's a little bit dark in here, so just bear with me. So this is the most important thing about a tiny house. You need somewhere to be able to sit and be comfortable with your friends and family. It needs to be large enough that you have somewhere to have your downtime. So they also have, it's not a standard size stove. It's somewhat small, but it's not just a hot plate and a counter microwave. They have a full sink. They have a little bit of storage. You know, they have tile. And you can walk just about all the way to the wall before you hit your head. So even though it is a dome, you don't lose your head space. A little bit of an entertainment center. There's a little, I don't know, is this heating and cooling?
No, it's just a cooler. The heater is below it.
Okay, so this is their heater.
That's Cadet.
So it's just a teeny little thing. And then you come all the way around, and the rest of it is bathroom. So you have more than a full-size bath, which is quite large. And again, you're not hitting, one of the things we do worry about is moisture because it is a sealed envelope. However, I don't smell any mold in here.
No, there would be no place to mold on the concrete.
Okay, so
none of the structure would actually mold. It would all be.
And then here is, if you're really short, you have a walk-in closet. I don't think it would be a walk-in closet for John.
Move the shelf up, but yeah.
But if it was two people, it would be adequate space. If you had three, if you had a couple kids like we do, I think that you would feel the pinch. For one thing, you would need to have bunk beds or something, and you wouldn't have a living room at that point. So I think as far as design goes, I think that maybe a tiny house that's built on one of those trailers would be better just because it will have a loft designed into it. I think if you were to put a loft in here, it would make it feel very claustrophobic on the main floor and claustrophobic in the loft.
It's not tall enough for me.
I think that the strength of this one is that it is weatherproof, highly efficient, but I think you do actually lose a little bit of space because the walls are not straight, because then some of your storage possibilities are a little bit limited. But all in all, I think this is a great little design and inexpensive rent for somebody that is wanting a really cute little idyllic looking house for not very much. And I know that some of them are actually movable. He has some that are actually forms that are movable.
They literally put on a trailer and trailer to your place.
There is the book written by the dude.
By the dude who wrote the book about the dude and the other dude.
He rents them out for $145 a month, and that includes everything. He pays for all maintenance.
No, $145 a week.
Sorry. I'll start over. So one of the really neat things here is that they have these little rental mini domes that are 314 square feet, and he rents them for $145 a week, and it includes...
$140 a week.
You're going to have to bloop a reel on this one. Okay, so we're here at the little monolithic dome business/village in Italy, Texas. And one of the things that I think is the neatest is that there's these little mini domes that are 314 square feet, and they rent for $140 a week, which is really good for rent. But not only is it good for rent, but it includes... Okay. What is it? Is it the battery?
No, it's my phone.
Okay, we that's the best audio in a jiffy I was able to get on the monolithic domes that Bianchi graciously forwarded to my email. Okay, 314 square feet. That's a pretty nice size.
Yeah, that's good for two people.
Yeah, good for two people.
If you're going to have a child, you got to have a second bedroom. But it's for people that's working, some place where they can come and, you know, clean up, eat, sleep. On the weekend, they can hang out, come back, sit around outside and whatever, then go on about their business, starting off next Monday.
Yeah, that's true. So it's
no
a
maintenance?
Good idea. Yeah, very low maintenance with the size of those things.
Absolutely.
That's a big factor.
The utilities and that you provide is cost of doing business. Unless Joe Biden changed things around, he probably will. But they should be written off.
I imagine Biden will do a bunch of executive orders.
The structures themselves are investments. They should be written off. Could be written off in a year's time under Trump. I don't know how much he's going to take it out. That's why I tell you about the differences in politics. Well, you should know that. But there you are.
Well, thank
maintenance,
you for
any
that.
Maintenance is any maintenance. If you burn out a water heater, you have to replace it. The lawn service, all that's cost of doing business. Tax write-off. So, effectively, your hard income is going to be undeterred because, well, your hard income would practically be tax negligible because you got all those expenses which you are providing to the customer where they don't have to pay. Well, those expenses is cost deductible, so they would be deducted from your gross income on the unit.
Right.
I don't know what Texas is as far as income on personal. What I would do it as a company, you would be in a, you know, you arrange it however you want to. So if I was coming up nowadays, I'd look at that, doing that. That's pretty nice. Now that that other gentrification area for this person there in St. Louis, I got to get it. I think I sent him and you that information, plus the normal structures. He's looking for that development. They're looking for three bedrooms.
Okay.
That's what they're asking for. I don't know what the price is going to be. I had to ask them to send me some costs. But the best thing to do on those, on if you're going to get into that type of development, is to have your own construction department that builds the units. Because, or you can hire out, contract out for somebody else to come in. It's going to be more. The cost is going to increase.
Well, excellent suggestions.
But anyway, there you are. It's 10 out to 11. See how early we are when we get
we are talking
about moving mountains
Tuesdays,
and stuff.
On Tuesdays, I got a solar class I'm supposed to take, so let me get to that because I'm 9 minutes late for that. But we'll pick up. Well, you know, I'll probably take that reparation.
And you may be able to incorporate you may be incorporate some solar in.
Oh yeah,
in there.
I'm sure you can.
And you may be able to. You know, you can go as far as having your own sewer system for 40 units. But that's you have to look at that carefully to see how it would be cost. Well, you could use your, you could have your own solar, I'm sorry, your sewer system if regulations start becoming an impediment. And there are there are units, commercially available units that would take care of, you know, 50 households,
mm-hmm.
both sewage and gray water disposal.
Okay.
You hear from Robin?
About last month I did. She was doing all right. She was the church was donating a car to her. And she just had to come up with the money for the taxes, which I'm sure she's got by now, or whatever she needed. I'll give her a call later today, see if I can get in here for tomorrow. And she's
all right, Ellie. I'll talk to you. I'll keep my eyes open.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot, Bob.